Welcome to This Just In, the show bringing you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. And now, for the fastest voice in healthcare, here's your host, Justin Barnes.
Thank you for tuning in, and welcome to This Just In. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. In these segments, I'll bring you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. As always, we're broadcasting from the This Just In studios on the Business Radio X network, as well as the Healthcare Now radio network. For this episode, my 218th episode, we have a very special first-time guest, Rob Havasi, Managing Director, Personal Connected Health Alliance. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thank you, Justin. It's great to be here.
So we've never had the pleasure of meeting, but we're catching up a little bit off air before the show. And I was very excited to hear and see that you are from the Boston area, or at least you're there now. Very exciting.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm in Massachusetts. So central Massachusetts, for those of you familiar with the state, near Worcester. Cool. I have been in New England for, I don't know, probably 30 something years at this point, but I'm a transplant from New Jersey originally. My accent is probably very confused. A little Boston, little New Jersey.
Love it.
You know, you get what you get. But yeah, I'm very proud New England resident and love the cold, the winter, the snow. I'll take it all.
You got it. So where are you calling in? What's the exact town you calling in from today?
So I'm in Grafton, Massachusetts, just a little bit southeast of Worcester.
Sure. I think my brother was married in the town center of Grafton, if I'm not mistaken.
It has a famous bandstand that was part of a movie in the 30s, so I don't doubt that.
That was it.
A number of weddings there, yep.
That's awesome. Hilarious. I've never been back, but I was there about 18 years ago for my brother's wedding. Very cool. So what town did you actually grow up in? We had a place down in Cape May that we would go down to in Jersey, so I drove through Jersey. But where'd you grow up, college, all that good stuff?
Everybody remembers driving through Jersey, right? The old joke used to be, what exit number?
Exactly.
So yeah, very fond memories of Cape May, but I grew up north of there in Bridgewater Township. So kind of in the north central part of the state. It was at one time a very rural area when I was born there in 1970. My father remembers having to navigate around cows. Mm-hmm. By the time I left for college in the 80s, that part of the Rand McNally Atlas that said, here's the New York metropolitan area, had actually crept right up to that part of New Jersey. So cool. I rode that growth wave there. I left for college in New England. I went to a small school in New Hampshire called, at the time, Keene State College.
Yeah.
Now, like many a university. Yeah. I am an immigrant to healthcare. I was actually a chemistry and environmental science major and spent the beginning part of my career working in laboratories and making lab instruments and stuff. Stayed in New England, met a girl, moved to Massachusetts, and have been here ever since. And as I mentioned, a late entry into healthcare, and part of that was also going back to graduate school late. So I did a master's in informatics, in health and medical informatics at Brandeis University, but I graduated when I was over 40 years old, probably 44, if I remember correctly. So cool. A late in life convert to healthcare IT.
Yeah, congratulations. So is HIMSS your first entree into healthcare and health IT, or is there another company before this or venture?
Yeah, so like a lot of things, right? I wound my way into healthcare. So during the networking boom of the late 90s, early 2000s, up to Y2K, I moved into a networking company, sold networks to healthcare. For some reason or other, I got tagged as a healthcare specialist because I guess my science background meant the big words that doctors threw around didn't scare me.
Right.
And when that all kind of wound down after 2000, around 2008, I left and I went to what was then Partners Healthcare. So I went to work for Mass General in Boston.
Sure, sure.
And I spent 7 years with Dr. Joe Kavadar at the Center for Connected Health.
Know him well.
And that was where my background really was cemented. So 7 years with Joe and the team focused specifically on connected health, and even more specifically on how we gathered remote data from patients and moved it into enterprise healthcare systems like our EHR and others. And from there, I came over to HIMSS in 2014.
Excellent. So what do you, before we dive into the HIMSS, your HIMSS role and what's going on over there, what do you like about healthcare the most, or health IT and digital health that you work in? What do you like? What's your passion there?
There are so many people who have a non-standard journey in healthcare because it's the one universal thing that we all experience. Everyone goes to the doctor. Everyone knows someone who's been sick. Everyone has had an experience. And, you know, in fairness to my colleagues and the hard work that we do, most of those experiences are terrible, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think I've met anyone in this career who said to me, you know, I had the greatest visit with my doctor. Check-in was seamless. He had all the information he or she needed right at their fingertips. And the bill was very clear and easy to read, right? So as an IT person from way back, I kind of just enjoyed the idea that there's enough stuff here. There's something for everyone to pitch in and try and fix. And I got into this business in a very odd way. As I said, I was a chemist by training in networking, had the science background, and I worked with a woman for a long time in a networking company. She went back to graduate school and got her master's and ended up at Partners, now Mass General Brigham. They changed her name. Uh-huh. She called me one day. She said, look, we worked on a number of projects together and I have a problem. I have a development team trying to build something. I have some doctors who want something built. The doctors are speaking a language none of my programmers understand. My programmers are spitting back things that none of my doctors understand. And I think you could help me translate. Mm-hmm. Would you be interested in coming to work here? I said, yes, absolutely. You probably pay better than what I'm currently making and the job's probably more secure. So that's how I got into healthcare. And that was really what I did for the first several years. I took my science and other background, the fact that my wife has a PhD in physics and I'm surrounded by all sorts of smart people. So I wasn't super intimidated at first. Maybe too dumb to be intimidated. And my knowledge of building IT systems as part of a networking company. I was in IT in a company that sold IT equipment. Mm-hmm. And by merging those two things together, I think we at the center did very successfully married what physicians wanted with what developers were capable of developing and actually built some systems that worked. And that got me hooked, right? This idea that there's a place for me, even though I'm not a doctor. Right. Or a nurse, right? Or a clinician. There's a place for me to help. And the rest is history, right? Follow the mission and follow the passion. And here we are.
Yeah, no, love it. So tell us about your current role at HIMSS.
Sure. So my formal title is actually a Senior Director of Connected Health for HIMSS. But HIMSS has a division, if you will, mm-hmm. called the Personal Connected Health Alliance. And that's actually how I came over to HIMSS. I was recruited in 2014 to come over and run a part of that organization. And what we do at our core is try to build and make the market work for non-traditional healthcare technologies, right? And that sounds weird at first, but we're not way out in the wellness space, but we are talking things like remote patient monitoring. We are talking about chronic disease management programs, now digital therapeutics, all those things that back in 2014 and earlier were out there, right? They were some weirdos in the corner would talk about that stuff. But PCHA, or the Personal Connected Health Alliance, was really formed to make that market work, to bridge that gap between what the market was doing, the way technology was going, the way market suppliers and what they were building, and what healthcare needed. So in a way, I was really coming full circle. I was asked to step back into a role where I helped translate between market suppliers and technologists and healthcare and what doctors are asking for. And my focus in particular in the beginning was on standards and interoperability of that data. If we're going to gather patient-generated health data, yep. if we're going to gather it remotely, we need to get it in a way that becomes clinically useful, that clinicians and doctors and nurses can trust, that they know the data is accurate, that they know it was generated with accuracy and transmitted with good fidelity. And that's been primarily my focus. But, you know, as this area of healthcare has grown in the last few years, I get to dabble in all sorts of things from behavior change theory to new types of sensors and devices and wearables, the rise of wearables and all sorts of other cool technologies. So it's been an extremely rewarding time for the last decade or so.
Yeah, I'm knee deep in RPM and CCM and these devices. And my gosh, it's a little bit of the Wild West out there. So I look forward to certainly diving in more. Taking a step back, I know this is a loaded question. So what is the current state of personal connected health in America?
It's certainly on everyone's mind, isn't it? Right? Mm-hmm.
It is.
The way
every day for me.
Yeah, it can concentrate people's focus. Mm-hmm. So we're in this. It's a very difficult thing for me to say, having been around for a long time. We're in this interesting interstitial period, right? There was a time when this was the Wild West, as you said, and it still retains a little bit of that edge, where it was something else. It's something that other people did over there outside the hospital. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Eventually it'll be worth doing at scale and in, you know, integrating with traditional healthcare. Now it's on everybody's mind. Telemedicine is the number one topic for, you know, weeks at a time searched on HIMSS. It gets the most hits on you know, thought leadership pieces that we put out, suddenly everybody's woken up. Oh my God, we can do healthcare remotely. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I can put a video screen there. What else do I need to do? Can I gather vital signs? Yes, et cetera. So where we are right now is people are waking up to something that some of us have been, you know, immersed in for a decade or more. And at times that can be frustrating. It's like when your team, look, I'm from New England, right? So it's when the Patriots go to the Super Bowl again and everybody's suddenly a Patriots fan, but the rest of the time they, you know, it's the team everyone loves to hate.
Yes.
It's kind of like that. We felt like outsiders for a long time, and now suddenly everybody's on the bandwagon, and RPM and as you said, other technologies are on everyone's mind. So that's good. It's we're very happy and thankful to see people suddenly paying interest to what we do. And the good news for everyone, I can deliver some really good news here. For the last decade or more, people like me and my colleagues have been working behind the scenes to build the infrastructure we're going to need to make these technologies really integrate and move to the next level. The interoperability initiative that I work on, for instance, was founded in 2006, mm-hmm. and companies have been dedicating time and money and engineering talent to fleshing out that interoperability structure for better, you know, close to 15 years at this point or more. So the good news is the foundation is solid. And now that everyone's woken up to the possibilities, we should be able to build quickly. And so that's where I think we are. We're on the cusp of something great, right? If we look at that old Gartner, not Magic Quadrant, but the we're over that period of inflated expectations. We were in a trough of disillusionment for a little while. We're on our way out of that. We're coming over that crest again, and now we can get down to the business of turning these technologies into something useful. So I'm very hopeful where we are.
Yeah, and in that direction. So let's dive right in some of the cool best practices, because this show is really focused on a lot of best practices and highlighting those. So in your opinion, your expertise, and what you've been in the middle of for the past couple decades, what should care providers be looking for, and then what should patients also be looking for regarding these personal devices? Because they're obviously very different based on which segment you're going for. So talk about providers first and then patients.
Right. Providers, patients. So for providers, this is yet another technology, set of technologies, if you will, mm-hmm. that should be evaluated just like anything else. We're going through these exercises with everything from blockchain to AI to you name it. And virtual care technologies, to lump sort of telehealth and remote monitoring and the rest of them together. Virtual care technologies are like any other. There are certain business cases where they work well. There are certain business cases that it's been tough to find, a return on that investment. They are exceptional at delivering care for some particular either disease states or some specialties. They're maybe not so good for some others. So the number one thing is to not be blinded by the shiny object. Mm-hmm. Not feel like there's some bandwagon you're missing, right? That, oh my gosh, we have to figure out our telehealth strategy this month or we're going to fall behind.
Right.
Right. It's to really take stock of what you need, what you really want to do as an organization, and how these technologies, like any other, can support that mission or can fill a hole that you may find as you do your normal surveillance of your clinical outcomes and other things. So there's nothing special here, right? Understand what business needs you have and find ways for these technologies to slot into those business needs. They're not a panacea. They're not going to absolutely revolutionize the world overnight, but they can do some things very well that you should pay attention to.
For sure. Now, what about patients? What should they be looking for?
On the patient side, there's a couple of things, right? So there's a couple of initiatives that HIMSS is involved in and that I'm involved in that I think offer some guidance here. Number one, right, there's an opportunity for us to look at technologies, sensor technologies, whether they're gathering data or whatever it is they do, and ask ourselves, where are they on a spectrum of, let's say, almost a toy kind of not really serious, very inexpensive device to, very expensive clinical grade, et cetera. And patients need to be aware of again, what problem they're trying to solve or what it is they'd like to adjust about their lifestyle and choose a technology that's appropriate. You can find a perfectly good pedometer that will monitor your steps. You can pay less than $10 for it, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can buy a very expensive monitor that will also track your steps, but add all sorts of behavior change to that and pay several hundred dollars for it, right? And all these devices, like most consumer things, exist on a spectrum, and figuring out where they want to be and to whom they wish to connect and share that data is probably the biggest choice in front of people right now, right? Lots of things grow up in walled gardens and silos. The amount of openness that people desire, the whether they want to share data with their doctor or just use this for their own use, all of those things play into that decision. But you know, you can find things along the entire spectrum of quality, along the entire spectrum of connectivity, along the spectrum of accuracy and cost, and finding the sweet spot for all of the different types of sensors that you might be interested in is difficult, but really the kind of thought that needs to go into this.
Yep. No, I agree. And for those just tuning in, we're speaking with Rob Havasi, Senior Director of Connected Health and Managing Director of the Personal Connected Health Alliance. And those are both under the HIMSS organization. So on that last topic, yeah, when I said the Wild West, because I work a lot with physician practices and health systems, and they're getting these grants, and now they need to go buy a bunch of devices, and there's not a whole lot of guidance in what devices. And some of that can be seen as great, and some of that's not so great, because you just went through a great rationale of what are these going to be connected to? What are you going to interoperate with? What are you going to integrate with? How's this data going to flow? You need to flow, into a repository, hopefully into the EHR, hopefully into the patient's chart. And the patient's got to make sure they have the right devices, so it goes into their chart, hopefully at some point, or at least into a repository where they can report it to their care provider. So, you know, there's just so many components that are very important for us to stay in front of. And that's just kind of what I'm, when I look out across the industry and work, this is what I'm, every day I'm tackling these different issues and components. So that's what I mean by Wild West out there.
Yeah, no, for sure. And there are a number of people trying to solve those problems now. Some have just realized they were happening. Some of us have been working on them for a while. Mm-hmm. HIMSS is part of an initiative that began under the name Exertia. It was a joint venture with the American Medical Association, the American Heart Association, and another company called DHX, DHX Group.
Yeah.
So that Exertia initiative is now folded under the HIMSS umbrella, and we're running it now as the HIMSS Digital, for a working title, if you will, the HIMSS Digital App or Mobile App Work Group. But whether we're talking specifically about apps on phones or we're talking about other digital technologies, the work that we did as Exertia and the work that we continue to do with the AMA and the Heart Association as partners is really trying to break this down, particularly for clinicians, and to put some parameters around what's the sort of minimum viable device that is acceptable for clinical use. Is its operability sufficient? Does it work with the systems as it's intended? Is it interoperable? Does it work with other systems? Can it share data? Is it, is the privacy, is the security up to snuff? Is there evidence to support that it can affect the change that the claims that the manufacturer is claiming?
Right.
These are all dimensions of the guidelines we published under that initiative. And we're about to release this year the third version of those guidelines. So HIMSS and a number of our members are hard at work right now and trying to solve that for not just apps, but all sorts of digital technologies in the space. And we welcome anyone who's interested in joining to look for that work group on HIMSS.org, or if you're a HIMSS member to drop in and join us.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just get a special plug for HIMSS. I mean, my world expanded tremendously with all the collaboration, and I saw much greater success because of what HIMSS afforded me by joining different committees and, boards and working groups. There's just so much to learn, so much to, learn from your peers, but also just collaborate and kind of get your hands dirty. It's extremely exciting. But let's dive a little bit into a couple more segments, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on the future of telehealth. And I had John Holomka here a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about, he loves telecare. And I love that term as well, because it's more action oriented even than telehealth. But what are some of your thoughts on where we're going, and then maybe even a best practice or two from your perspective?
Yeah, again, right, for those of us who've been around for a while, I always feel compelled to point out telehealth, telecare is not a new concept, right? There's a famous magazine cover from the 1920s before television was even ubiquitous, with the doctor sitting there in front of an image of a patient, right, mm-hmm. with a phone to his ear delivering this. So even back in the 1920s, people knew this was the future. And part mm-hmm. of me says, geez, you'd think for about 100 years now, we would have figured this out by now.
Yes, I agree.
So there's a frustration factor for sure.
Yeah.
But the good news is, the pandemic did what it did, and it woke everybody up to the fact that when the shackles were off, we could deliver care effectively. In many cases, not all cases, remotely, right? Yeah. And again, as I mentioned about any technology, there are some use cases that work very well, some use cases that really don't add very much using teletechnology. So the future is absolutely bright, right? The good news is HIMSS did a survey back late last fall, and we just redid many of those same questions right now, asking consumers. And this was some of the first consumer research we did. So demographically, we were a very good cross-section of the United States by age, by gender, by income, et cetera, by region where you lived, rurality versus urbanity, and all sorts of other things. It was a very good data set. And we learned a couple of things that I think are important to the future of this. Number one, the answer to your question about do patients like telehealth, do they prefer telehealth, will they accept telehealth, how much will they pay for telehealth? The answer to all of those questions is it depends on how old they are, right? Across every parameter we checked, whether it was income, whether it was education, whether it was where they lived, whether it was what jobs and careers they held, nothing mattered. The only significant difference was age. Older people prefer in-person visits, and post-pandemic say, I want to go back to the office. Younger people, by and large, more than 50%, not 90%, but more than 50%, 53, for instance, in one of our latest surveys, or 55 in another, say they will prefer, they would prefer to stay where, you know, it's clinically relevant or clinically acceptable. They would prefer to stay virtual. They would prefer a video visit rather than going back to the office.
Sure.
Generation Z is higher than millennials, that are higher than my generation, Generation X, which are higher than baby boomers. So above all else, if you're a provider and you're thinking about a telehealth strategy, age matters. The age of your patients, from what we can tell, is going to be the biggest determining factor of acceptance or preference for any of these virtual care technologies.
That's a great stats, and also just, you know, very good advice for care providers, and to look at their patient population and make sure they're serving their patient population, because I completely agree. I mean, I'm out there every day as well, and you just want to make sure that you are in touch, because there was some rumblings, oh, we're going to go back, you know, to the way it was. And I'm like, no, we're not. I promise you, there's a huge segment of this population that is not going to do the in-person visits at any scope that they used to. They're going to want, you know, access to different modalities and more virtual care. So be ready for that.
I could drop a little data on you too. And this really just hit HIMSS.org last week. So this survey is brand new, hot off the presses. Yep. Not very many people have seen it. We asked a couple of simple questions, said, you know, would you consider leaving your provider if a televisit was 25% cheaper, or if the cost of care at another provider was this much less, et cetera? And with, again, the same sort of age-based pattern, a lot of the younger people said, yeah, 25% is about the threshold above which I'd consider moving to my provider. And if I can get telehealth cheaper, okay, I'm doing that. There was another question there too, right? So post-pandemic, you know, what's your preferred method of having a healthcare visit? And a surprising number of even baby boomers, over a quarter, said, you know, video, honestly, for primary care, it's video. Right. For my specialist or someone who needs to actually, you know, touch or tweak or whatever, you know, I'll go back to the office. But for primary care, it's video. And again, my point is, in all of this, each of these numbers is interesting, and you can probably parse them until your head just spins. But to your point, Justin, there is a general dissatisfaction out there with the healthcare experience. And so no matter what question you ask, would you switch if? A quarter of everybody says yes. People will switch if it's cheaper. People will switch if it's more virtual. People will switch for this, for that, for the other thing. While all of those are interesting, to me, it points to a general dissatisfaction with the experience of care. So as you said, the public at large, call them patients, call them consumers, whatever word we want to use, are not going to go back to the way it was, because there's just a dissatisfaction. And although telecare has not revolutionized everything, right? It still feels like a visit. You're still talking to your doctor about the same things. People have started to see there is a different way. Maybe this isn't the only way, but there is a different way, right? And it seems effective. I kind of like it. I'm going to demand change. I don't know that people have coalesced around what they want that change to be, but I feel there's a strong dissatisfaction of people out there who are starting to demand something has to get better.
No, very well said. I love it. We've only got about 40 seconds here or so before I got to begin to wrap up the show. But I know we have HIMSS 21 coming up, August 9th to the 13th. Some of us may be in Las Vegas. We may not be in Las Vegas. We don't know yet, 100%. But we know we're going to have a HIMSS annual conference, and I'm extremely excited for it. It's one of my favorite times of the year. But in, you know, 20 seconds or so, what are you looking forward to the conference this year?
Yeah, I think like everybody, all right, I'm looking forward to seeing people I haven't seen in a long time. HIMSS is as much a social event as it is an education event. I joked internally, there was a meeting, someone said, what can we do to really make this conference memorable? I said, make it a 2-day open bar and everybody will love us forever, right?
You're actually right.
So seeing people and friends and colleagues I haven't talked to in a year in person is important.
Yeah.
Topically, I can tell you that we're starting to see some early rumblings. Registration is strong. Mm-hmm. This many weeks out from the conference, we're doing very well. But one area really jumped out, and since some of my initiatives are focused on innovation, right? The number of people who identified as being from startups or small companies is far higher than normal. And in particular, there's a 2-day event inside the conference under the banner of Accelerate Health, which is HIMSS initiative to really focus all of our innovation content under one banner. So if you see Accelerate Health together, there's something innovation focused there.
Cool.
You know,
I've got to wrap up.
Yeah, 100 people more than we've seen in previous years are looking at that content. So it's going to be interesting this year.
Beautiful. Rob, you're a tremendous guest. I'd love to have you back. We have a lot of things in common. I appreciate your time and for you joining us today. And thank you to everyone for joining the show. You can listen weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag ThisJustinRadio so we can respond to your comments from the show. If you miss any of this episode or want to hear more, all my shows are posted at Apple iTunes, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Google Play, and tune in and check out the website that we launched and updates at justinbarnes.com. Thanks, everyone. Stay safe.